She took it out of her pocket and carefully smoothed it between her swollen fingers. Then she squatted and placed it in the beam of sunlight that fell in a corner of the cell, and at last turned and knelt over it. She read slowly, moving her lips like a semi-literate, forming every word that he had written, as though she could taste it on her tongue. "Be strong. It won't be for much longer. And remember, I love you. Whatever happens, I love you." Her vision swam with tears as she read his last words, and then she sat back and whispered softly, "I'll be strong. I promise you that I'll be strong for you, and I love you too. With my very existence, I love you."
"They may fight like women," said Sergeant Alfonso, as he surveyed the piles of captured Zimbabwean army equipment, "but at least they dress like warriors." The uniforms had been supplied by Britain as part of their aid commitment to Mugabe after the capitulation of Ian Smith's white regime. They were the finest quality, and Alfonso and his men stripped off their old, faded and patched tiger-striped battle dress with alacrity. In particular, they were delighted with the gleaming black leather paratrooper boots with which they replaced their electric collection of tattered joggers and grubby tennis shoes. Once they had decked themselves out in this captured finery and fallen in on the beaten earth parade ground, Sean and Job went down their ranks, checking and instructing them on the correct way to wear each item of uniform. The quartermaster tailor followed behind them, correcting any gross discrepancy in size and fit. "They don't have to be perfect," Sean said. "They won't be on parade. Just good enough to pass a casual glance. We haven't got time to waste on the niceties of dress." After the men were fully kitted out, Sean and Job worked on their plan of Grand Reef Base for the rest of that day and most of the night. First, they sat on opposite sides of a desk in the headquarters communications room and brainstormed for every detail of the base layout that they could dredge from their memories. By nightfall, they were satisfied that they had the most accurate picture that they could hope for. However, Sean had learned from experience that it was difficult for an illiterate to visualize physical reality from a two-dimensional drawing, and discreet inquiry had revealed that almost all his new command, although battle-tired warriors, could neither read nor write. Most of the rest of that night, they worked on building a scale model of the base, setting it out on the beaten surface of the parade ground, working by lantern light. Job had an artistic flair, and whittled model buildings from the soft, balsa-like wood of the baobab tree, and used water-washed pebbles of various colours from the sandbanks of the river to lay out the airstrip and roads and perimeter fences of the base. The following morning, the raiding party was paraded and inspected by Captain Job and Sergeant Alfonso, and then seated around the model in a ring. The model proved to be a major success, provoking lively comment and query. First, Sean described the raid, moving matchboxes down the pebble roadways to represent the column of Unimogs, illustrating the diversionary attack on the perimeter, the withdrawal of the loaded trucks, and the rendezvous on the Umtali Road. Once he had finished, he handed his pointer to Sergeant Alfonso. "All right, Sergeant, explain it to us again." The ring of attentive troopers, delighted in correcting the occasional mistakes and omissions that Alfonso made. When he was finished, he handed the pointer to his senior corporal to repeat the lecture. After 5 repetitions, they all had it perfectly memorized, and even General China was impressed. "It only remains to see if you can do it as well as you explain it," he told Sean. "Just give me the trucks," Sean promised. "Sergeant Alfonso was with the unit that originally captured them. He knows where they are hidden. Incidentally, the guards major, whose uniform you will use, was killed in the same action." "How long ago was that?" Sean asked.
"About 2 months ago."
"Beauty," said Sean bitterly. "That means that those trucks have been lying in the bush all that time. What makes you think they're still there, or that they're still in running order?" Colonel. China gave that thin, cold smile that Sean was coming to know and loathe so well. For Miss Montero's sake, you had better pray they are. The smile vanished. Now, while the men draw their rations and ammunition, you and I will have a final discussion. Come with me, Colonel. Once they were in the communications room of the command bunker, China turned to Sean with his expression bleak. During the night I received a radio message from my agent in Grand Reef Base. He only transmits in an emergency. Otherwise the risk is too high. This is an emergency. Training on the Stinger systems is complete. They have orders to move the missiles out of Grand Reef within the next 72 hours, depending on availability of transport aircraft. Sean whistled softly. 72 hours. In that case, we won't make it. Colonel, all I can tell you is that you had better make it. If you don't, you will have no further value to me, and I will begin thinking of old times. He touched his damaged ear significantly. Sean stared him out silently until China went on. However, not all the news is bad, Colonel. My agent will meet you in Umtali and give you full intelligence on the buildings where the Stingers are being held, the room used as a lecture theatre, and the training manuals. He will accompany you to the base. He is well known to the guards at the gates. He will assist your entry and guide you to the training centre. That's something, Sean growled. Where will I meet him? There is a nightclub in Umtali. The Stardust, a gathering place for pimps and whores. He will be there every evening from 8 until midnight. Alfonso knows the club. He will take you to it. How will I recognize your agent? He will wear a T-shirt with a large portrait of the comic book hero Superman on the chest, China said. And Sean closed his eyes as though in pain while China went on. The man's name is Cuthbert. Sean shook his head and whispered, I don't believe this is happening to me. Superman and Cuthbert? He shook his head again as if to clear it. What about the RZ with the porters at St. Mary's Mission? That is arranged, China assured him. The porters will cross the border tomorrow night as soon as it is dark and conceal themselves in the caves in the mountains above the mission station to await your arrival. Sean nodded and changed the thread of the discussion. If we leave now, how long will it take for us to reach the spot where the Unimogs are hidden?
You should be there before noon tomorrow.
Is there anything else we should discuss? Sean asked. And when China shook his head, Sean stood up, slung his AKM assault rifle on one shoulder, and with his free hand lifted the small canvas duffel bag that contained the dead guard's major's uniform and his personal kit. Until we meet again, General China.
Until we meet again, I will take good care of Miss Montero. Never fear, Colonel.
The column was heavily laden. Each man carried food and water for 2 days, together with ammunition, the extra belts for the RPD machine guns, grenades and rockets for the RPG-7 launchers. Though they couldn't run under the weight, Sergeant Alfonso in the van set a cracking pace. Before nightfall, they passed through the Renamo lines into the destruction area, a free fire zone where there was a possibility of encountering Frelimo patrols, and Sean ordered a change of formation. They opened up to intervals of 10 meters between the men in the single file of the main column, and he posted flankers at the head and tail to guard against surprise attack. They kept going hard during the night, with 10-minute breaks every 2 hours, and by dawn they had covered almost 40 miles. During the dawn break, Sean moved up to the head of the column and squatted between Alfonso and Job. How much further to the trucks? Sean demanded.
We have done well, Alfonso replied, and pointed ahead. The trucks are there in that valley.
They were on the foreslope of another area of hilly, forested ground,
and below them the terrain was broken and bad. Sean appreciated why General China had chosen this area of the Serra de Gorongosa to defend. There were no roads in this wilderness, and an attacking army would have to fight its way past an endless series of natural strong points and fortresses. The valley that Alfonso pointed out was some miles ahead of them, and beyond it the country changed from its savage mood and flattened into a broad, gentle plain. Down there the dark forest was broken up and blotched with paler grasslands. Alfonso pointed to the horizon. Over there are the railway line and the road to the coast. He was about to speak again when Sean caught his arm to silence him and cocked his head in a listening attitude. It was some seconds before the sound separated itself from the gentle susurration of the dawn wind in the forest below them and hardened into the whine of turbo engines and spinning rotors. There! Job's eyesight was phenomenal, and he picked out the approaching specks even against the dark background of hills and forests. Hinds! Sean spotted them, and Alfonso shouted a warning. Take cover! The column scattered into cover, and they watched the gunships coming on, rising and dropping as they kept low over the hills, sailing northwards towards the Renamo lines in an extended formation. Sean watched them through the Russian-made binoculars he had acquired from the Renamo stores. It was the first opportunity he had had to study a hind at leisure. There were four of them, and Sean surmised that there would be three flights of four machines to a full squadron of 12. My God, they are grotesque, he murmured. It seemed impossible that anything so heavy and misshapen could ever break the ties of gravity. The engines were housed on the top of the fuselage below the main rotor and formed the humpback that gave the machine its nickname. The air intakes to the turbos were situated above the cockpit canopy. The belly drooped like that of a pregnant sow. The nose was deformed by the hanging turret which housed the Gatling cannon, and from the stubby wings and bloated belly were suspended an untidy array of rocket systems and ordnance stations and radar aerials. At the rear end of the engine mountings, the ungainly lines of the machine were further disturbed by another extraneous structure which seemed to have been tacked onto it as an afterthought. Exhaust suppressor boxes. Sean remembered an article he had read in one of the flying magazines to which he subscribed. These structures masked the exhaust emissions of the twin turbo engines and shielded them from the infrared sensors of hostile missiles. The author of the article had lauded their efficacy, but although they made the machines almost invulnerable to heat seekers, the weight of the devices, combined with that of the titanium armour, to reduce severely the hind speed and range. Sean wished he had read the article with more attention, for he could not recall the figures for airspeed and range that the author had quoted. The flight of gunships passed a mile or so to the east of them, bearing steadily northwards. General China is in for a breakfast show, Job remarked as he rose from cover to reassemble the column and continue the march. Although they had been going all night, the pace never slackened, and even Sean was impressed by the condition and training of Alfonso's company. Almost as good as the scouts, he decided, and then grinned to himself. Nobody could be that good. More than once, Sean dropped back to check that the men he had in the drag were anti-tracking and covering spoor, for now there was real danger that a Frelimo patrol might find them. He had fallen only a few hundred metres behind the rear of the column and was down on one knee studying the earth intently when suddenly he knew that he was not alone, that he was being watched. Instantly Sean threw himself forward, the rifle coming off his shoulder as he rolled over twice into the cover of a fallen log beside the path and froze, his finger on the trigger, his gaze raking the bush where he thought he had seen the flirt of movement. It was closer than he had imagined. From the clump of grass right beside him came a mischievous giggle, and Sean raised his head and whispered furiously, "I've warned you not to sneak up on me like that."